Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
It is Black Monday. It is Cofield and Company. We are ESPN Las Vegas. Willie Ramirez, Jeff Parles, we welcome you in. It is the Battle Born Hour, sponsored by Battle Born Lawyers. James running the show. Cofield up in Laramie with the run of Rebels. Pete Carroll has been fired. Everyone expected it. The vibe was expecting that to happen yesterday at Allegiant Stadium. The Raiders with a last second win. They end 3-14, but the one and done season for Pete Carroll, and it's all over. John Spytek spoke at 2 o'clock, and we are going to continue to talk about this all day. It is Big 4-4 time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big 4-4. Number 4.
Should the Raiders move on from Max Crosby? What say you, Steve Cofield?
I'd want to sit down with him, get his understanding of what the organization is doing here, and that it's not an immediate win right around the corner, that it's going to be a build. I also want an apology. I do want an apology, and I want to promise that what happened two Fridays ago is never going to happen again. I don't want any more of the shenanigans that suggest that we're less than a up-and-up organization, and I also really need some parameters on his podcast and what he's going to be doing on the podcast. And if he can't agree to all those, then I think he still has good trade value, and I start shopping him, and I try to get a deal like the Cowboys got with Micah Parsons. I don't think you're going to get that, but I would move on unless I'm hearing the right things from Max Crosby.
John Spytek was posed a question, and here's what he said about Max being tradable.
I have a lot of respect for Max and how much he loves to play the game, and I've had the opportunity in the last several weeks to spend a lot of time with Max, and I think it's been well documented that he didn't love the idea of not playing football, and I think you always want that from your best players. In fact, I think that's why they're your best players. So I love Max. He embodies what a Raider is. I've been pretty upfront with that from the day that I sat up here almost a year ago, and I continue to believe that.
So here's the thing.
Can I jump in real quick here, Willie? Okay, John Spytek said, I've spent a lot of time with him the last couple of weeks, and we talked. If that is the case and Max stormed out of the facility and posted that stuff on social media, then I'm probably 99% sure I need to move him, because that is absolute disrespect to John Spytek. Wait, we've been talking and you still did this? You don't have an understanding after we talked. Now, maybe Spytek doesn't – I don't have the timeline. Spytek didn't describe the timeline correctly. But if we have been in active dialogue about what the organization is doing and what we're trying to accomplish here, and you still threw a hissy fit and ran out of the building – and then didn't show up for the Sunday game, the second to last game of the season, then I don't know if the relationship can be fixed. Now, here's the thing with Spytek. We just said last hour, or he did, that he wants to leave hiring the staff in the hands of the new head coach. I do ultimately want the new head coach to meet with Max, but I'm going to tell him what I'm thinking about him as a GM and what's happened, and if he's cool with that and starting a new relationship. Because if he's not cool with it, then we're all in agreement. It's time to move on.
And he also needs to sit down with somebody that's above him, and that's, well, two people. That's Tom Brady and Mark Davis, not just the new coaching staff. But what I heard in Spytek was basically it just a totally different verbiage, but the same thing that Pete Carroll said after they made that decision. Well, we've been talking with Max. This is what's best. Have a lot of respect. We know he has a lot of heart. Basically, he just said the exact same thing, but in his own words. Right. I appreciate how much Max Crosby, you know, has put forth to this franchise, and he's become the face of it realistically since Derek Carr. They moved on from Derek Carr. I know the investment, and I keep bringing this up, and people look at me like I'm crazy. Like, what's it got to do with football? Well, the guy has turned his house into what looks like a dang resort. I mean, with what him and his wife have built. It doesn't even look like a house. I mean, it's incredible. But so he's really invested into staying here. But the point is, I think that it's a relationship that's just about broken. And if it's what's best for the organization, but more importantly, what's best for him, and they can get him to a contender, and they can get a couple of first round picks, it could behoove the team to do that, to complete this whole rebuild.
Chicago feels like the destination that makes the most sense when it's all said and done, just to counter the Parsons move. But, you know, just listening to Spytek, I didn't take anything from what he said. It's just exactly what you said, Willie. It's very similar to what Carroll said a few weeks ago, which I read as, all right, really nothing. Nothing's going to happen for a while. And I agree with what you said, Cofield, where you have, whoever you end up hiring has to, that probably needs to be the second conversation that happens of a conversation with Max, with whoever ends up getting this job, and especially if it ends up being a defensive-minded guy, that conversation might even have to happen before you're even on the ground here in Vegas.
Number three.
Number three.
All right, so the Los Angeles Rams, the Inglewood Rams, at 12-5, will open the season in the wild card round at Carolina. They'll go to Charlotte. Where? Against who? The 8-9 Panthers. Joe Shad put it out. Joke. Fix this, NFL. Do we agree? Do things need to change? Or, hey, this is how it's always been, and this is the way it's going to be.
I think Cofield and I are going to disagree on this one, because I have no problem with this. Look, it's the system as it is. Of course, you're at 32. What's the fix for this? The fix would be what I've said, what I would like to see Major League Baseball do, is either get rid of the divisions altogether or go two divisions of eight. But then you have a scheduling mess on your hands as well. But I don't have an issue with it. It's the system that these teams have been dealt. Everyone knows what it is going in. I don't like seeing an 8-9 team get a home game. I don't care. I don't care if the Rams went 14-3. It's the system that it is. I don't love it, but hey, you got to deal with it. You got to work with it. And guess what? The only reason the Panthers are in this game, a big reason of it, the Rams lost in Charlotte earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go.
Overall, they had a better year. Yeah. They played a tougher schedule. They deserve to be the home team. They should switch back to three divisions, get rid of the fourth division, fold in whatever the three divisions are. This is an argument, and Willie's old as I am, so Willie can probably remember at least when this first came along in the early 2000s. This is an argument I actually had on the air with a big NFL writer at the time, and I think rest in peace if he's not passed. And I hope you're doing well. Len Pasquarelli, cool. He was on ESPN, and you know, was kind of a heavy set guy. And I remember Len and I screaming at each other on a radio spot, and I'm like, the four division alignment sucks, because this is going to happen every so often where we get, you know, a team winning a division that's under 500, and even worse, you're going to get teams that have 2, 3, and 4 games less in the win column, and they're hosting games. And he was like, he fought me on it. And I'm like, I was right, Len. I was right. Rest in peace, but I was right. Turn over one time for me. One time. Because I was right. This is messy. It's ugly. It's unfair. And it's a stain on the NFL. Is it the end of the league? No. But they could easily make a change. I mean, easy is a relative term. They'd have to, scheduling would change a bunch. They'd lose some rivalries. But, you know, what's the Atlanta-New Orleans rivalry going to die because they don't play twice every year? And they could still play twice. You could put them in the same division. I think they should realign once again, go back to three divisions, and make sure, I guess even with three divisions, it is possible, but it's a lot less possible than four divisions.
Well, by the way, Len is still with us, Cofield.
Oh, good. Well, I hope he's doing well. I hope he lost weight. I did. Willie did. Jeff did.
Yep.
Number two.
Jeff says this is the most wide-open playoff field in a very long team. Of the 14 teams, Jeff thinks there's a legitimate argument for 11 of them. 11! Winning the Super Bowl. The three that he says, just no shot. Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and Carolina. What do you think, Steve?
I don't think Carolina has a shot. I do think Pittsburgh has a shot. I think the AFC is so topsy-turvy. I don't have a lot of respect for the teams at the top. In fact, I think the teams at the top could go bye-bye early in the playoffs, and then the field is wide open. But I agree with you. Too many things that have to go right for the Panthers to win it, but I think it's wide open beyond the Panthers.
So the Pittsburgh guy wavered on this morning, because one of the draws for them in this postseason is they get a home game on Monday night, and they've won 24 straight Monday night home games.
That's right.
Tomlin's never lost at home on Monday night. So they sneak in the back door. They in theory, draw what I think is probably the worst matchup for him in Houston, because how the heck are they going to block the Texans? But then you get this multiple Steeler Tomlin voodoo nonsense going for him, where they don't lose on Monday night. Tomlin's the best coach, period, as an underdog, especially when he's a home underdog. So, you know what, now that I'm talking through this, maybe I am going to add Pittsburgh back and make it 12 out of 14 here, Willie and Cofield, where I just think Green Bay doesn't have the horses with the injuries right now, and Carolina's just not any good. But there is an argument. Like, I think Jacksonville and Buffalo could legitimately, that game could tell the whole story of the whole playoffs. As ridiculous as they may sound on the surface, I know, Willie, you're talking during the break of you liking Jacksonville. Cofield knows I've been on Jacksonville for 2.5 months now as the team coming out of the AFC. And the one team I didn't want to see them playing in round one is the one they drew in Buffalo. So there you go.
Well, I've been talking about Trevor Lawrence. Steve knows that. So this is real quick here. Sleepers in both conferences. Jacksonville's my sleeper in the AFC. And the Rams, which realistically shouldn't be labeled a sleeper at the 5 seed because they very easily could have won the NFC West. But the Rams are dangerous, man. They got the championship pedigree. You got Davante Adams. You got Puka. The Rams and the Jags, teams better watch out for those two seeds. Those are my two sleepers.
I wouldn't call Jacksonville a sleeper at this point.
Well,
I
they're seeded when you're talking about low seeds.
I think they're a legit.
They're 3 seed.
Yeah, they're a legit. Like, if we're going sleeper in the AFC, I don't know if the Chargers are good enough with that offensive line to win 3 straight games, but they played Denver tough with the Trey Lance yesterday. And then, Cofield and Willie, I mean, this may sound ridiculous, but the defending Super Bowl champs are getting slept on here. That defense, when they're full bore, has been awesome the last month, and they got a great draw with San Francisco.
I say Chargers and Niners. And obviously the road path is very difficult for both, and both have big issues. You mentioned that the line with the Chargers, but they do play really physical football and beat the piss out of the opponent. So I love their matchup in the first round. And then I think the Niners, they're going to have to outscore everyone. But the Niners certainly can do it. And do they have the best coach in the playoff? Well, damn, they don't even have the best coach in the division. They may not even have the third best coach. Well, they have the third best coach at worst in the division. That's how good the coaching is in the NFC. But yeah, I'll go Chargers and Niners are sleepers.
Number one.
All right, we're definitely going to have to carry this one over, but let's introduce it. Number one, the college football playoff semifinals later this week. Miami and Ole Miss, just what the committee drew up, and a rematch in the Big Ten, Oregon-Indiana. Let's intro it, and then we'll do our predictions when we come back. But did we expect Miami-Ole Miss? I personally liked Miami in both their games.
I thought Miami had the capability of beating Ohio State. I didn't think they would, but their defensive line dominated the game and made Saiyan look like a first-year starter. And look, Ole Miss in Georgia was just such a phenomenal game. It was a coin flip.
Crazy.
It's pretty amazing. We have Mario Cristobal, who people have gone after him all these years for his on-field coaching ability. And we have a guy coaching his third career game in one of the semifinals. It's truly remarkable in that Fiesta Bowl.
So. Yeah, real quick. I did not expect Miami. I did not expect Ole Miss. But after watching Chambliss last week, I think he's the story of the Final Four.
Yeah.
All right, then Oregon and Indiana is the other one. We're going to talk about that on the way back again. Huge college football playoffs. And of course, we got Steve Kim coming up. He's a big Miami fan. So we are in the Battle Born Hour with Reno. We're talking with Cofield up in Laramie, Willie Ramirez, Jeff Parles, Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas on Black Monday.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
That's right. Cofield and Company on Black Monday, as we're calling it. Pete Carroll has been fired as coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Been talking about it. We will continue. We got Jesse Merritt coming up in a little bit to discuss it. But Willie Ramirez, Jeff Parles, and Steve Cofield up in Laramie with the Running Rebels. We got James running the show. We left off. We're going to do real quick. We're going to hit our semifinal predictions, the college football playoff later this week. We'll start with Steve Cofield.
So right before the break, I said I think the X factor in these semis is Trinidad Chambliss.
Yep.
He is super impressive. I thought Pete Golding coached a really nice game. Now, the other X factor here is which coaches are actually going to get the coach in this game for Ole Miss, and how much does that hurt them in this one? But I think Ole Miss can get by Miami. And then the other game, I think Oregon's going to win. I think the it's going to be the end of the road for Indiana. So I could see an Oregon-Ole Miss finale, which will kind of blow people's minds. And the best quarterback in the field may not be the potential number one pick in the NFL draft, Dante Moore. I think it'll be Trinidad Chambliss. But those questions about who's coaching Ole Miss, those are really important here the next day or so.
I'm going completely opposite. I like Miami. I just think the D-line in the end will be too much. And, boy, if Chambliss can put together another performance like he did in the Sugar Bowl, it might be tough. But I'm concerned about the Ole Miss O-line. And I like Indiana. I just think in the end, they have the better quarterback and they have the better coach. That's a very difficult combination to overcome. And, boy, what a difference in the offenses that Oregon will have seen. JMU and Texas Tech, and now you got to see the Heisman Trophy winner with arguably the best offensive line in the country. Good luck. So I'll go Indiana and Miami.
I'm with Jeff. I'm big on defense. Defense wins championships. I like what I've seen, and I believe that we're going to see. I mean, it's hard to argue with what Miami did. It's hard to argue with what Indiana did to Alabama. I think Miami and Indiana win, and I think this is a year of Cignetti. I think that Indiana is going to win the national championship, so I'm going Miami versus Indiana, and the Hoosiers win it. Your college football playoff semis and national championship predictions. All right, let's move on and keep it with college football right here. We're going to let Cofield take it from here. Updating us on UNLV football, the transfer portal situation, of course, leading that charge. Anthony Calandria is gone, but there are a bunch of others. Steve, what is taking place with UNLV?
So right now, according to what we've seen come out, and these aren't big announcements when most guys leave UNLV, so it's kind of what leaks out from the portal, it looks like they've got 11 guys in the portal. I think I have the correct number there. Calandria leads the list in terms of most important. I think they've lost three guys on the defense, one on each level that could have been starters. Lucas Conte on the defensive line, and he's not a project. He's a guy who he can definitely go to power four because he's 6'4 and 292 pounds, and he's a good player, and he's still got 2 years left, I think. Zay Patterson, who they got in from UCLA and then really started playing him a bunch late, he went in the portal, and I like him because he's got the size, and he's got the size potentially if they switch to a 3-3-5 to be really useful at linebacker at like 6'4 and 235, but he's out. He visited West Virginia, and he was already commit by the end of the day at West Virginia. So you lose a linebacker to West Virginia, and then Andrew Poudrell was one of their better cornerbacks. He was in from Montana State, and I thought he was the most reliable, most consistent. He was actually the most healthy as well. He went in, so I think that's the other potential starter on that back level. And again, if they're going to go to a 3-3-5, I don't know what they're going to do because I don't know what the future of Paul Gunther is. You know that Mike Shear came back, right, guys? So
yep.
He had popped up at actually in Dallas. I don't know if he was doing – I think he was doing an interview in Dallas around the Frisco Bowl and then actually was around the team. This was a quick thing that came together. It doesn't mean he's going to be the DC. Right now he's going to be the linebackers coach. He's a great recruiter of linebackers. He's a really – I thought he did a great job in his second year as DC. So maybe that signals are going to be switching styles. We'll see what happens with – Mike Shear, but quarterback's the big thing. So Calandria yesterday was pictured, and I plucked a couple of those pictures up on the internets. Calandria hugging Mike Norvell in Tallahassee, I think walking with his agent, which people were like, oh, look at this guy. Who cares what he looks like? And then today, apparently, he's visiting Georgia Tech. I would guess that's not the end of it, because I think he's probably like, this is no insult to him, but he's probably the third, fourth, or fifth choice for a lot of schools, depending on what happens with some of the bigger names. And then once those names go off the board, there could be some big paydays out there available, even more money for Calandria. And then on the UNLV side, they had Jackson Arnold in over the weekend, and he's a pretty big name. He's a former top 10 overall, well, in the quarterback class of a couple years ago. He's been at Oklahoma. He was at Auburn. I don't think he's played for and under a coach like Dan Mullen. So this could be another one of those resurrections where a guy with a lot of promise finally figures it out with a real quarterback guru if Corey Dennis stays around at OC and Mullen is around. So I think there's been a lot of predictions, and this is what I hate now about the transfer portal, because people are just trying to jump the gun. And it's like, my prediction, I got it right. Or, if the person gets it wrong in their prediction, like, well, something fell through. From what I hear, the deal could be done by the end of the day. You could see some signaling of the commit up on UNLV football on the Twitter account. If it doesn't happen, I don't know if that means it's not going to happen. I'm sure they're looking at other quarterbacks, but that kid's really intriguing based on his recruiting profile, and he's He's kind of like Calandria, not the biggest guy, good mobility. So he could probably run a lot of the same stuff that Mullen and Dennis want to run now. And here's the other intriguing part of it. If he wants to stay around and they're not going to look at a position switch, if he's healthy, Alex Orji is a hell of a guy to have in the quarterback room as an option. And he can do some of the things that maybe Calandria couldn't do. You saw a lot of direct snap at the end of the season where they tried to go a little more power in the run game. That could be Orji. I also think Orji can, with another year and some health under his belt, can actually throw the ball. He's just got to refine it. He's got a freaking howitzer. Everything just comes out a billion miles an hour. And then year two in the offense, he'll be more comfortable. I thought he was a little hesitant in the spring. So, you know, unless things fall apart and it's a disaster in the portal, they're going to have a good quarterback room without Calandria. You know, and I root for Calandria. I hope he goes somewhere and I hope he makes $1 million plus.
Well, and you mentioned Calandria in terms of like there's going to be other – he may be the two or three option at some of these major places, but there's going to be other spots where he can go in and sort of just take over. But hasn't UNLV emerged as one of those schools? Like when we were talking about Tate Martell years ago and he was bouncing around from school to school, it was like maybe he should go to the MAC or the Mountain West and revive it. Hasn't UNLV become attractive at this point after the last 3 years, the money that can now be pulled in with NIL? Isn't this a landing spot yet?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, different than Odom, and Odom had the Brennan Marion, that offense, that was attractive to people. And it worked. It worked really well for Jaden Mayava. It certainly worked really well for Haj Malik Williams. It was working okay for Sluka until he went kind of batty. No, I think Calandria is the guy you hold up and go, listen, Jackson Arnold or someone else who hasn't gotten the playing time or, you know, just couldn't win the job. This guy was solid at Virginia, but he had a lot of warts. They fixed him, and now look at what's happening to him. And if you want to go to the NFL, maybe this is where you can go straight from UNLV. That all said, if you look through the list, guys, of portal quarterbacks, and there's more names going in. Like I was watching a USC fan stream on the way over, and Husan Longstreet was their true freshman. Well, he's probably not going to get playing time unless Lincoln Riley decides to split time with he and Mayava. And, you know, the person there is like, well, that's going to be his loss. Is it going to be his loss? If you're a freshman and you're not playing, your earnings clock's running, man.
Yeah.
You got to go somewhere, and that's why UNLV is attractive, even though technically you're dropping down levels. Why not go to quarterback school, achieve, start, put up numbers? You want to stay at UNLV for another year and make pretty good money, or you want to break the bank and go back to Power Four? You can do it. I mean, UNLV is, I think, one of the top destinations now of all the Group of Five for quarterbacks.
The Arnold one is fascinating because it didn't work at Oklahoma, got benched again, like you said, at Auburn last year, but he fits that profile so well. He is so uber talented. It just hasn't been able to be put together. And look, that's for being in the G6 in 2026, this is a good spot to be if you're the guy, Dan Mullen and UNLV, being able to say, hey, come here, play great for us for a year, go get bag somewhere else. I know UNLV fans won't love it, but you know what? That's a pretty good recruiting pitch moving forward.
Well, and with the dynamic of the conference in terms of the turnover, right? With the defects and that are leaving, and then the way that the new conference is going to lay out, and what UNLV has done the last few years, you're talking about turning out two of the most explosive offensive players nationally in Ricky White and now Calandria. So they have – Mullen has that as a selling point, saying, look what this program has done, and now it's under him. So like Steve said, I mean, in terms of it being an attractive spot, it's one of the top three, four, G5, G6, however you want to label it, schools, and that really could turn out the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year. And if you are bringing in a guy who's being scouted in terms of looking at the next level, this is where you thrive and get in the spotlight.
Guys, I want to remind everyone, basketball game tomorrow with the 6:30 pregame, the IBW NECA pregame with myself and Matt and Everett. So that's tomorrow here in Wyoming. This will be a rant that I do on social media multiple times. I just want to close on this one, and you guys can have the show. I keep seeing people say, what is the deal with kids going to 4 and 5 schools in 5 years? And my response is to them, well, I could do the same exact thing in my profession. If I was getting a 20% or 40% or 70% raise every year, I could go from radio job to radio job, and I feel like it was making me better. Or if I feel like I needed to go to a smaller market to get back to a bigger market, I might do it. We don't have those opportunities. There is nothing wrong, and kids know there is nothing wrong with going to 4 or 5 jobs. It's a job. 4 or 5 jobs. Get your academics done, but 4 or 5 jobs in 5 years, there's nothing wrong with it. I don't know why we're so uncomfortable with it. Get used to it.
It's Well, they're getting paid, so it is a job now, and we need to stop calling it amateur because it's college, but guess what? They are pros. They're getting paid. Steve, we appreciate it. Rebels tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Stay warm up there. Caller number 7, we got a pair of tickets. James is waiting for you. Pair of tickets to see Def Leppard at Caesar's Palace on February 10th. Def Leppard, ready to rock the iconic Las Vegas Strip. Don't miss Def Leppard live at Caesar's Palace. The Las Vegas residency, February 3rd to the 28th at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. This show on February 10th. Pair of tickets. James is waiting for you. Caller number 7. It is the Battle Born era right here on Cofield & Company, brought to you by Battle Born Lawyers, Willie Ramirez, and Jeff Parles. When we come back, we're talking, hey, it's 2026. Are we still doing resolutions? Do we have travel plans? Where are you going, Jeff? Where am I going? I'm going to tell you what's on my mind for a trip this year.
It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield & Company on a Monday, or as we've been saying all day, Black Monday. Willie Ramirez with Jeff Parles here in the Finley Toyota Studios. James running the show. 2026 is upon us. It's the first Monday of the month. I am not a big believer in New Year's resolutions. I think you set yourself up for failure when you do that, because if it doesn't happen and you fail in February or March, you go, I'll just have to wait till next year. Just start your goal whenever you want to start it. But I am big on travel plans. You said that you do have a trip planned for this year.
I got Hawaii later in the year. I'm at the age where all my friends are getting married, so okay. We'll be on the plane multiple times during the summer for weddings too.
Well, so. I think the last time that you and I were together on the show, I asked you if you were a TikTok guy.
I am not.
But I did ask you, right? I told you how about a year and a half ago, I got caught up with, I started vibing with streamers.
Okay.
And getting to know them, and I was trying to do some stuff, and I've been putting a lot of content out. But I got to tell you, in the last several months, since August, I've come to learn that those streamers that I had vibed with, the ones in the UK are a lot nicer. They're a lot friendlier. And I've collected a group of streamers that have realistically become my little family, and I love it because they're 8 hours ahead. So I'm not when I'm on during the day or I get off deadline from doing stuff. I'm at home. I vibe with them. It's like 8-9 o'clock at night for them. It's noon 1 o'clock here. So if there's no events going on, I'm sitting there chilling with them. You said you went to London.
Yeah, we were in London this past fall. What a tremendous, tremendous city. Loved it.
Loved it.
Was there for about 5 days. Now, look, there's a lot of the UK that I want to still explore and didn't have enough time to go see the countryside or even go to Scotland or Wales or anywhere else. But we were in London for 5 nights, 6 days. I thoroughly enjoyed my time there.
Well, I love the fact that they run in packs, right? They and here's the thing. They're like, the streamers that do these battles and everything, like they treat it like a job. They get the women get all dolled up. The guys come on and they're trying to flex or whatever. But it's just different with the UK streamers, and I've gotten such a kick out of them. So there's one group, I call it the Sophia crew, right? The girl, she was in Vogue, and she's got her partners Darcy and Jess, and I mean, they clean up and they absolutely mop the floor with when they're battling, and then when they're battling one another, it's usually Darcy winning because of my guy Burrito. We call him Burrito out in Texas, gifting, but you get to gifting them. And then there's another crew, the Phoebe crew with the two Lucys, Lucy Dixon, Lucy Penn. But then there's some guys, there's Marcus, there's Bryn, and their supporters, Mike, Ormix. I mean, it's a collection. It's like and I heard England is like as big as Rhode Island. Is that right?
It's got to be bigger than Rhode Island.
I heard that you could drive across the state in like 6 hours. It's tiny. The country's tiny. So they got me so fired up. I'm ready to. I looked up prices already. I've been to Jamaica. I've been to Canada. It's all I've been out of the country.
Well, Willie, you got a night. You got multiple direct flight options right here in Las Vegas to London.
$600 bucks.
Wasn't bad. Wasn't bad when we did it.
When I looked up flights to go to Seattle, it was like $450. I mean, an extra $150 bucks, and I'm down in London or Man City. hanging out with the crew, my new crew. I call them the family. I call them the family. I call them my kids, my UK kids, right? I got two different crew, the Phoebe crew, the Sophia crew. And then there's one of them, her name's May. I say, I go into her room. I feel like I'm going into therapy. She's got the calming voice. So if you're a TikToker and you like the streamers, check out the UK streamers. Because let me tell you something. They have a totally different vibe than some of these American streamers and that do the battles. Man, when you can't gift them and you can't send them coins and the gifts, they just write you off. They're done with you. The UK streamers, they just come on and vibe with us and pump up the chat. So anyway, there's my rant. The UK streamers, on board with them. All right, so we are halfway through the show. Battleborn Hour. When we come back, Steve Kim joins us. He's got a lot to say, obviously, about his Miami Hurricanes and, of course, Pete Carroll.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield and Company back with you. Willie Ramirez and Jeff Parles. James running the show. We got Steve Kim around the corner. You know, I want to touch upon real quick. We were just talking about London and the people over there. You know, I was alone for Christmas. My son went back east to see his mom, just to give you an example. So I was chilling at home, and I would go on TikTok, scrolling or watching TV, whatever, and one of those kids that I've mentioned, Lucy Dixon, she had popped on. So a couple of the kids popped on, but they were their families. And she was like, "Hey, Willie, how are you?" Found out I was alone. She kept coming back. She would go do something. She'd come back on. And it was almost like we were hanging out. It was like I was hanging out with a daughter so I wouldn't be alone. Just to show, and I mean, this is just somebody you met on an app. So I forgot to bring that up before. And then and her friend Ava checks in on me all the time too. And I mean, these are people that are, you know, like I said, abroad. So shout out to the UK streamers again. All right, so we are waiting on Steve Kim. We are going to be talking to him in just a second here. Let's talk a little bit about his Miami Hurricanes, Jeff, because with what they pulled off with their defense is highly impressive. I think that when you do what you did, you know, through the first two rounds, especially when you were not expected to do it, and you do it to the defending national champs, I think there's a confidence that builds. So as good as Mississippi's offense is, as impressive as their quarterback, and what they're as explosive as they are, I just don't know if they're ready to meet this team and what it's capable of doing in terms of punching you in the mouth and continuing to do it.
I'm fascinated by the coaching in this matchup. Because Crystal Ball, obviously, there's been a lot of noise through the years that he's just not a good enough in-game coach and all that noise. But Miami plays the right physical way. They are they're gonna beat the heck out of you on both sides of the offensive line, the defensive line. Obviously, their pass rush is as good as anyone's in the country. And it's funny because, like, Ole Miss just beat Georgia. And this is a really good Georgia team. I know the SEC was down, but they beat Georgia. And you go into a matchup and you're still a 3.5-point underdog, 3-point underdog against Miami here. And for me, it just comes down to how does Ole Miss, especially with all the issues with the coaching staff, too, because some of the guys went to LSU once the portal opened and they're not coming back. They'll still have Charlie Weiss Jr., but other than him, it sounds like everyone else is going to be in Baton Rouge. So for me, I like Miami because of the way that defensive line has just been dominant in this postseason. They held A&M to 3 points. They held Ohio State to 10. And as well as Chambliss played, this is a different animal up front for that Ole Miss offensive line, and you're doing it without the bulk of your offensive staff there. That is a really difficult ask for Ole Miss to pull it off. But if Ole Miss pulls this thing off, I don't care who wins the other game. They're alive to beat either Big Ten team at this point. And for me, it's just of being able to find a way. And look, Ole Miss found a way in that game, even though, look, you had a horrible clock disaster at the end of the first half. But Chambliss was that good. The defense was good when it needed to be. And look, credit Pete Golding, who has looked awesome through two games.
All right, Steve. I just heard from Steve, so we may talk to Steve later on in the show. He's a little backed up, tied back. So we'll circle back. I want to talk a little bit about go to the NFL.
Yeah.
We talked about it earlier, and I believe we have some sound from it. James has it, but there was a lot of animosity, Jeff, over Myles Garrett's sack record. Did you realize that there's a lot of people pent up aggression about this? Did you know about this?
People in Cincy weren't happy.
People in Cincy, people, some broadcasters, a lot of angry people. Cincinnati coach Zach Taylor, not happy.
There's 5 minutes left in our season. We're playing for our lives here. And I was never told that we're going to stop the game. And in a critical moment like that, and the refs just said that they made a decision that they were going to stop the game. And they said they tried to do it as quickly as possible. I didn't feel that. We didn't sub. We're trying to be on the ball and go and play with tempo. And the umpire just held the ball so that we couldn't do anything. And I'm yelling at Joe, get on the ball. We didn't sub. We're going. And that we couldn't play. And so, again, trying to get an answer was not easy. They just said that they made a decision as a crew to stop the game when that happened.
Playing for their lives, Jeff.
Yeah, at 6-10.
What lives?
the Battle of Ohio, Willie. No, it just like to Zach Taylor. Just shut up, dude. Like Myles Garrett broke a record that again it hasn't been. Strahan did it about two decades ago, so it isn't an eternal NFL record. And some people will whine that it happened in 17 games as opposed to 16.
But do you see the money opportunity here?
Go ahead.
That they were playing for their lives. T-shirt makers, get your Bengals Lives Matter shirts printed. Bengals Lives Matter. No? They're playing for their lives.
Well, here's the funny thing. Zach Taylor kept his job.
He did keep his job, and they made it a point of announcing that he was going to keep his job. You know who else wasn't happy? Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I don't think they can do that. I never knew you could let the whole team get on your field. That's like me catching my 10th pass and the whole team running on the field. We're going to get flagged. You can't do that.
Okay, now here's the thing. Zach Taylor sounded ridiculous in his argument. Kind of agree with Ja'Marr Chase.
You do. It can be. I'll just say this. It just when it's a lack of self awareness from folks in Cincy here, because your team stunk. Your team has missed the playoffs three straight years. Where you have Joe Burrow, and I know Burrow got hurt twice and it derailed the season 2 years ago and derailed this year, but. You have a guy who's an all-time talent. You missed the playoffs three straight years, which should be impossible, regardless of what the injuries are for Burrow. And you're more concerned about this? Yeah, because part of it was like, oh, I wanted Taylor's clip was, oh, I wanted Joe Burrow on the ball quickly. Oh, yeah, because you go tempo after you get sacked all the time in this league.
Right.
Like, what are we doing here? It is whining for whining's sake. By the way, we knew Mike Brown was going to keep Zach Taylor, by the way. We knew that. Kept Marvin Lewis for 9 more years than he should have. Dude doesn't want to, basically like Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob. Doesn't want any sort of extra money to be thrown out there that he doesn't have to spend. So it's no shock that Zach Taylor is still there. And, you know, I didn't intend this to turn this into an anti-Zach Taylor rant, but it is because the guy is only an NFL head coach for as long as he is because he's had Joe Burrow. And the prospect of Joe Burrow being a high-end quarterback is what saves Zach Taylor yet again.
Not the only people that are unhappy. Guess who else is unhappy?
Oh, go ahead.
Guy whose record he broke, Michael Strahan.
I mean, I hold the record for a 16-game season. They hold the record for 17-game season. That's the way it works out.
He's still claiming
you,
the title.
But, you know, you can't compare records from 12-game seasons to 16 and 17-game seasons. That's true.
Kind of like what people had to say about Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Plum.
Well, it's interesting because this is a whole – this was honestly circulating on social media probably about 2 weeks ago when Garrett, before the Steeler game, went in between the Cleveland's 15th game and the Steeler game last week, of like the NFL does just like ignore the fact that they move from 12 to 14 to 16 to 17 and inevitably they'll move to 18. But look, it is what it is. Like, it is the record for most sacks in a single season, regardless of what the games are. So, even though I will say that wasn't the best Strahan audio from yesterday, though.
Was it later in that quote?
Yeah, it was later in the quote.
I can't remember what he said.
Going after Danny Cannell for no reason. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Just an absolute pot shot at Cannell for no reason.
By the way, Steve Kim's going to join us at 5:25. So,
sweet.
Real quick, I want your take because you mentioned – we have about 3 minutes, and this is your topic you sent over. Your coaches staying that probably should be fired.
Oh, I just mentioned one of them.
You did.
Just mentioned one of them.
You did.
Zach Taylor should be gone. Mm. And I
touched on him. Go to the other two.
Yeah, I don't care about the Burrow injuries. The other two, and by the way, I didn't even mention Mike McDaniel in my list because that situation in Miami has gotten so weird. Where you fire Chris Greer midseason, you play well against a bunch of bad teams other than the win against Buffalo, which in the end cost Buffalo a chance at the division. But I think McDaniel's safe. I don't even think there's a conversation. So that's why I didn't even do this. Even though there's multiple guys on this list that are not going to get fired, Todd Bowles in Tampa is a very tricky one. Because overall, I think Todd Bowles has done a reasonable job down there. Mm. And he's won a division every year up until this year as head coach. Tom Brady retires after his first year, and he wins back-to-back with Baker. Like, Baker's turned out to be a much better quarterback than we expected. That's a pretty good job. But the end of this stretch, the stretch that ended this year was so bad, where if they just won two games and got to 9-8, we weren't asking them to win 11 games, Willie. We were asking them to get to 9-8. Couldn't do it. They lose to Quinn Ewers. They lose to New Orleans at home. They lose to Atlanta at home. They lose that game to Carolina as well. Just couldn't happen. And for me, and look, they're in a very hard spot now because the two guys that probably would have been the realistic replacements, one of them's coaching the Panthers. The other one's coaching the Jaguars. So it's a really difficult spot. I would have probably gotten rid of Bowles. I think it just run its course, especially Willie. They had to take the touchback on kickoffs and started the 35 willingly because of how bad their kick coverage had been. So I would have fired Bowles, and then I mentioned this earlier in the show. The fact that Aaron Glenn's getting a year or two in New York is ridiculous. The Jets...
Well, what did they get outscored by?
The Jets are the first... This is just a few of the stats, Willie. Jets became the first team in NFL history to lose five straight games by 23-plus. That was the last month of the season. The Jets... offense was on the field for more than 50% of their plays down two scores or more. That's just the third time that's happened since 2005. What else? They had no interceptions, Willie. They intercepted zero passes. That hasn't happened since pre-World War II. So, like, it's impossible. And that's just some of the stats. There are other stats. By the way, since 2020, the Jets, under three different head coaches, by the way, have three of the five worst point differentials. And that's under three different head coaches. They did it with Gase in 2020. They did it with Salano in 21. And they did it with Glenn this year. It's just an impossibly bad organization. But Glenn might be the worst. If Glenn, I wasn't old enough for the Kotet era, so I can't remember. Don't remember it. Glenn is just, I'm flabbergasted. He was the most obvious one and done candidate other than Nathaniel Hackett.
I saw your tweet yesterday. I saved it, and then you sent it in the rundown. So, all right, but obviously Black Monday has included the Las Vegas Raiders. Pete Carroll's out. When we come back, our insider Jesse Merrick joins Cofield & Company.